Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. This is the live event. The program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KV at MTOR, ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knott.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants. Welcome to another edition of the Night Zone.
L.A. Marzulli, one of the leading experts in the field of UFOs and authored several books on the topic, including the most recent alien interviews. Marzulli looks at the current manifestations of UFO activity worldwide and relates those experiences to what ancient texts say about them, as well as current understandings. There's no doubt that UFOs are here and not going away. So what does this mean? What are interdimensional beings? What are orbs? And why are all these things happening now? Has humanity finally become enlightened enough to accept new life forms? L.A. Marzulli, a favorite on the widely popular Coast to Coast AM, brings a realistic discussion on UFO entities and actual facts that surround them. L.A. Marzulli and director Richard Shaw present to you The Watchers.
Strange and mysterious light hovering above East El Paso tonight. It looked like a UFO.
I pray, O Yahweh, that you send a sighting.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
These are genuine UFOs in the sense that no one's ever been able to explain what they are, but they happen. They're not fake.
I never, ever in a million years would have believed in UFOs if I'd not seen it with my own eyes.
Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And indeed, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants. It is another edition of Night Zone Radio, and tonight we have with us Richard Shaw from Pinlight.com, the director of a new DVD series entitled The Watchers, and L.A. Marzulli, probably one of the best-known authors and UFO presenters, paranormal information with over 30 years in the field. I'll just crack open the microphones. Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to the Night Zone.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a delay on the link, but I think everything will work out fine. It's great for you guys to be here. I really appreciate you taking the time, especially this close to the Christmas season. I know you're busy. You guys are going to be on Coast to Coast December the 22nd, I believe it is.
Okay, Rich.
Oh, yes, we are at a time where we're going to be able to reveal The Watchers, the latest project that you just promoted. Thank you very much. And we're very excited about it.
Yeah, I've seen the video, and I gotta say, guys, wow, what a job! So, Richard, you were with us with Marshall Masters a couple of months ago, or actually, a month and a half ago, regarding the Torah Code. We've had an impressive response from that edition. Do you have any more Torah updates for us?
I do actually. Since we were on that show, remember we were talking about earthquakes in Los Angeles area and in California. And after that show, Marshall had thought we'd have an earthquake within a month. And then Glazerson, Rabbi Glazerson and I got together and worked on it some more. And he came up with two more tables prior to that program. One of them gave a date of July 6th that there would be an earthquake. And another table just said earthquakes, plural, earthquakes in L.A. in 2010. And actually both of them ended up being quite accurate, except for the fact that we didn't have an earthquake on the 6th, but we had one on the 7th. We had a 5.4 earthquake, which was centered just slightly to the left of the Salton Sea. And when that happened, I just smiled because I thought, there you go. There's our prediction on the Torah codes actually occurred only a day after we said it would.
Wow, impressive. Well, we're definitely going to do a follow-up on that in the new year because, you know, the information that you presented that night just seemed to fit seamlessly with tonight's show. And I, as I said, I've seen the Watchers video, and I got to say, guys, wow. I mean, this is impressive. I've seen a lot of videos in my time of doing the show, but this one hits the mark.
Thank you.
I very kind.
Mr. Marzulli, go ahead, Mr. Marzulli, Lynn, if I may call you Lynn.
Sure.
It is an honor and a pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Well, I appreciate that. The honor is all mine.
Yeah. Well, you've been chasing this phenomenon and the like for over 30 years. What would you say is the most startling information that you have found today?
Well, I think the most startling information, from my point of view, is the fact that this breeding program has been going on literally for decades. And when I say the breeding program, we sort of touch on that when we get in the latter part of the Watchers DVD, when we bring on Dr. Roger Lear and we talk about the removal of the alien implants. Well, you know, you don't have implants there unless you've been abducted. And this, it's very unnerving because now we've got physical evidence that this is not imaginary, that these people have not had breaks with reality. These implants are real. The metal is from off-world metallic substances. It has nanotubes in it, and it sends off radio signals. I mean, it's incredibly bizarre. And it all links back to this breeding program, which has been kept extremely secret. These so-called extraterrestrials, which, of course, I believe are not that at all. I believe that they're interdimensional beings, highly malevolent interdimensional beings. And these, they're creating what I believe is sort of a hybrid, a human-slash-alien hybrid, which will look and pass as a human being but will be and have powers that are far greater than normal humans. It's extremely unnerving.
Right. This sounds awfully like the legend of the Anunnaki, where the angels came down and bred with the daughters of man.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a huge difference between the Sumerian legend and the Anunnaki and Sitchin and the gang and the History Channel Ancient Aliens deal. With all due respect to them, and it's like they always keep talking back and going back to the Anunnaki, and that's interesting. But when we look at all the plethora, the abundance of texts that we have found in the Dead Sea Scrolls that talk about these entities, these fallen angels coming to Earth. It's not from another planet, unless, of course, we completely twist the text and try to make it something that it's not. There's a war that's been going on between these two factions. In fact, the book I'm working on now is called The Cosmic Chess Match, and it discusses this great cosmic war that's been happening. It's been literally spilling over from time to time here on this planet. The bottom line is this, that there, and I realize with all due respect to Sitchin and everybody else, you know, Von Daniken and the whole crew, they never, ever look at the evidence from that point of view. When I was on the History Channel again, they interviewed me for 2 hours in August, and I probably won't make series two or season two in the aliens thing because I come from a totally different paradigm. But they never, ever go there. It's always ET, 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 where the evidence, in my opinion, points to something else entirely, entirely different other than, you know, ET. We agree that there is a phenomenon going on. Something has happened in the past. Something is happening again now. Okay, we have common ground there. But then we branch off as to what is the cause behind it.
Right, yeah. And I can kind of get my head around this interdimensional theory, because looking at the vast expanse of space and what could possibly be the closest planet that has life, it would take, even with an amazing amount of technology, it would still, we'd still be in the distant outer atmosphere of whatever it is they're chasing here. So I can see this interdimensional working out much easier than space travel.
And I would certainly concur with that. And what we seem to see with these ships and these entities, they seem to flit in and out of this dimension. They do things and perform aeronautics which are literally defy our physics as we know them. When we look at what happens in the abduction phenomenon, in fact, I write about this in one of my books called The Alien Interviews, and I equate an ancient text, it's actually found in the Christian Gospels, but it talks about this one guy, we all know him, St. Peter. Peter's in jail, and this angel appears to him. And so let me just walk your audience through this, because it's bizarre stuff. Peter's in the jail. He's chained to a wall. All of a sudden, this angel, this messenger, appears to him. Peter's not sure whether he's asleep or awake. In other words, his mind is now clouded over. But the angel has just apparently appeared or come through the wall and the jail cell to appear inside the jail cell. So what are we looking at here? He's manipulating matter and energy in ways that we don't understand. The next thing that happens is he tells Peter to get up. And as Peter's getting up, the chains fall off of him. Next thing Peter knows, that notices that everyone in the jail cell is asleep. The next thing that happens is the jail cell opens by itself, the door of the cell opens by itself. The angel leads him out of the jail cell. Peter then notices that all the Roman guards are asleep. What are we looking at here? Then they go out to the courtyard, and once again, the huge prison gate is opened with no person touching it. So we see that this angelic being is capable of manipulating matter and energy in ways that we don't understand. And Peter, through the whole thing, is like, not, you know, he's like sort of not stupefied, but it's he's having trouble functioning because of the power just being near in the proximity of this being. And this is a good guy because he's bringing him out of the jail.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
Let's look at the alien abduction phenomenon. What happens?
Yeah.
You wake up and you're surrounded by little grays. Your partner is switched off. There's your first similarity. Everyone in the jail cell was switched off, and your partner now is switched off in the bed next to you. Then you find yourself levitating and going through the wall. Gee, what does that sound like? As these beings are taking you some other place. So that once again, we see the manipulation of matter and energy, space and time in ways that are physics, in ways that we have no idea what these beings are doing. And then, of course, you find yourself on a ship in a different location. If you're a woman, gynecological experiments happen, as Dr. Roger Lear talks about in the Watchers DVD, with the women, ovum is taken, with the men's sperm is taken. There's a breeding program going on. What's interesting, this ties back into ancient text, ancient prophetic texts, which we are warned and tells us that at this day, it'll be similar to the days of Noah. And, of course, that gets back into what happened when the fallen angels came the first time. The breeding program, the hybridization of that breeding program was known as the Nephilim, which became literally giants. And so we see a similarity, in my opinion, between the angelic visitation with Peter in his cell, the modern-day abduction phenomena, to what goes clear back to antiquity, when they came in the first incursion, this breeding program. And that's, you know, when you start connecting the dots, it's like, oh, my gosh, something's going on here, and it's not good, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Now why would you think that they would be required for them to create a breeding program? Is this to cleanse their genetic code or to cleanse ours?
No, neither. There's a breeding program. Look, and I'm sure you know this stuff, and most of your listeners probably have heard of the idea that some sort of an antichrist figure. Well, here's some ancient prophetic texts for you, which are sort of a mind blower. We know that, and this goes back 2,600 years ago, literally, but there are several texts from different periods of time, but they're all thousands of years old, which say in the latter days and the last time, the Jewish temple in Israel will be rebuilt. Now, we know it's on the Temple Mount, you know. We know it's on the Temple Mount, the Muslim shrine, the Dome of the Rock. And yet the Temple Mount is 40 acres. So one prophecy tells us that there's going to be a wall that will be erected between perhaps what becomes the third temple, the new temple, that which is not yet rebuilt, and the Dome of the Rock. We'll have to wait and see how all that plays out. But here's the end game. Here is the end game, and this is prophesied literally for thousands of years. It talks about that this Antichrist figure will seat himself in the rebuilt temple in Jerusalem to be worshipped as God. Now, that's just bizarre. I mean, that's just bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. That is what I think the whole end game, this breeding program, and it's twofold, not only to create this Antichrist figure, but a friend of mine, Russ Dizdar, has written this book called The Rise of the Satanic Super Soldiers. If your listeners have not seen this YouTube video after the show, write this down, folks. You want to go to YouTube and type in Madness, like MAD, M-A-D, Madness in the Fast Lane. It's from the UK. It's not a concocted hoax. It was actually a BBC documentary that they did. It's called Madness in the Fast Lane. When you look at what these two women are capable of doing, they're hit by cars doing 50, 60 miles an hour. They're T-boned. They're laying on the asphalt as police and medics rush up to help them. They're there for about a minute or two on the asphalt. Then they get up and they start fighting with the police. One girl, after she's hit again from another car, right, twice now, within a span of 15 minutes, she has to be restrained by six people who cart her off the asphalt. Four men and two women grab this woman and literally with two men on each leg, that type of thing, and cart her off. Finally, she's sedated. You need to look at this because we're looking at one of two things, in my opinion. We're looking at modern-day Nephilim hybrids, which is what we talked about a few minutes ago, or we're looking at satanically, ritualistically induced altars through satanic ritual abuse. Right. It's got to be one of the two. There's a psychiatrist who says it's a puff of madness. Well, it's a little bit more than a puff of madness, pal. It's in my opinion. Yes. If you haven't seen the video, I exhort you to go watch that because it's bizarre.
So your contention is that this has been happening for thousands of years. First of all, unbeknownst to man, and now with government assistance. Did I lose you there?
Yeah, you left me there. Last word I heard was government.
Oh, okay. Sorry. With government, also, with government assistance.
Also, I have something to add here, too, Colin. I think what we're looking at here is what Lynn is talking about is the difference between fallen angels and ET, and how do we know what an angel looks like? And if the fallen angels have the same abilities as the good angels, then it would be very easy to be tricked from them. Plus, because of just centuries of iconic ideas about what angels are and what they're like, a lot of this has been kind of reverted over into the area of fantasy so that people don't believe it, instead of looking at it as a real scientific manifestation, a physical thing that's going on, which is... when you start looking at it like that and you try to put the pieces of the puzzle together from logic and really having studied all of these things, it makes a lot more sense.
Right. I do agree with the fact that I do think that organized religion has definitely muddied the water. And their stories and their method of bringing the information to us, I think, has been so disjointed and distorted that thank God for people such as Lynn and yourself to bring the truth back to the fold, because as you mentioned earlier, Lynn, straight from Christian philosophy, the story rings true. I mean, it rings true, and once you get rid of the clutter, then the core story is very important.
Yeah, this really has nothing to do with religion, which is mostly traditions of men. And ceremonial nonsense, and and, you know, cathedrals and monks and burning candles and,
yep,
you know, iconographic
exactly
paintings and all this stuff has nothing to do with the experience. The experience that turned literally the Western world, the Greek-Roman world 2,000 years ago, was what happened when Yeshua was walking the earth, and he promised it. I mean, this stuff was prophesied for thousands of years, and finally, you know, it took place, and it changed the way people thought who had the experience. But see, all that's been obfuscated by the very organization which seeks to promulgate it, unfortunately. But the experience is real. I had it 30 years ago. It's ongoing, and it's one that I walk through and walk in daily. It's changed my paradigm and my worldview, and now I do this full-time and write books and talk on radio shows about it.
Right, yeah. And when you wrote of the Nephilim in your books and the other videos, it seems to indicate to me that the chronology of events that has been shrouded by, as you say, organized religion and the likes, many of those events are coming true, and people are using the premise of 2012, Planet X, and all of the other all the other bells and whistles, but the overall concept, the overall experience is definitely does appear to be coming true. It's very crystal clear once you get rid of all of the religious muck, as I call it.
Even within religious circles, and let's say mainstream Christianity, there is most people don't know anything about biblical prophecy, and I say that with all due respect. It's just not talked about. People don't want to hear it. It's just most people are very non-educated, let's say, and certainly ill-equipped to even discuss it. And yet about one-third of not only the ancient Hebrew scriptures known as the Tanakh, but what Christians would call the New Testament, but one-third of that is prophecy, talking about future events. And there's a reason for this, because it separates that book from any other book on the planet. That thread of prophecy is what differentiates it from any other book on the planet, because it's not only one author. You've got 60 authors spanning literally thousands of years, and yet this prophetic tapestry creates a very clear picture, which is just bizarre. So someone is outside our space-time continuum that knows the end from the beginning from the end, and that begs the question, if this entity, this being, knows this stuff, is he or she good? And the answer to that, in my opinion, is yes, incredibly good. And that brings us back to the chess match, the cosmic war, which is going on, which is about to spill over, which actually is spilling over onto this planet and will continue to do so. I think we're accelerating towards what prophecy calls this seven-year tribulation period. I think we're moving towards it. I think the signs are here.
And I find it very, very interesting that, you know, in the religious or in the religious beliefs, the end times and the likes, even though they're shrouded in this man-made plan for control of the masses, it is coming to fruition. And I'm disappointed that so many people are brainwashed by the organized religion thoughts that, you know, you've got this omnipotent being that is about to come back and create peace on Earth. And it concerns me that so many people have been brainwashed, I guess is the best way, of not understanding what the ancients are trying to tell us.
Well, I mean, that's you said a lot there, and it's, you know, it's a three-hour conversation. But, yeah, basically, I believe that we are looking at the second coming or the return of Yeshua, more than likely, basically known as Jesus. Most people would call him Jesus, but his name in the Hebrew, his name in the Hebrew is Yeshua. And so what we see, again, I want to talking about religion. And usually I get to this, you know, much later on in a conversation like this, but because he's had such a bad rap. But here's the deal. And this is just one example. If you had leprosy in the ancient world, 2,000 years ago. Leprosy was a death sentence. If you were a leper, you watched your flesh rot off your body. I mean, it was just an incredibly horrific disease that a person who contracted that thing would just live out, 10, 15, 20 years basically in misery and finally die. Not only that, but you were ostracized from your family and you joined a leper colony. Gee, what a great, it's a death sentence. And you'd walk around going unclean, unclean, and say, calling yourself out so people would stay way away from you. Well, here's the deal. These 12 lepers show up and there's a bunch of people that are listening to Yeshua speak. And one of them cries out, "Have mercy on us." Basically they're saying, "Hey, can you do something for us?" I'm speaking in the vernacular of our day. It's like they're saying, "Have mercy on us." They're saying, "Dude, I'm hurting here. Can you help me?" Welcome to 2010. Yeah. That's a translation in the modern vernacular.
Yeah.
And Yeshua says, "Go your way, you're healed." Instantly, now get this, instantly the lepers are healed on the subatomic cellular level. How the heck did he do that? See, it defies everything we know. And we all can agree that that's a benevolent act. I mean, you can't tap dance around that. It's a wonderful act. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And again, that goes back to being able to manipulate mass and space and time continuum. It all comes back to the fact that these beings do have that ability.
Well, and that's it's really interesting that we've only seen, in my opinion, the type of miracles that happened, 2,000 years ago. We haven't seen anything like it since, not to the degree and the, can I use the word excess here, that happened when Yeshua was walking the earth. And remember, the prophecies that he fulfilled of his first coming were well over 200 or 300. Well, there's just as many prophecies with the second coming happening now. And you say, well, what does this have to do with the watchers and UFOs and the DVD? Well, we don't really get into that. All we're doing with the first watchers DVD is just to show that there's a phenomenon that's going on, and it's really for the skeptic and for the person who's traveled in UFO circles for a while. Doesn't matter. What we try to do is give a plethora of evidence and shake the viewer and say, look, there's a phenomenon that's going on here. We need to cast off the shackles of ridicule and nonsense and start looking at this thing headlong and understand that it's real burgeoning and not going away. And, of course, that's the title of the DVD. And, Richard did a wonderful job in piecing all this footage together, and we had so much information. And, of course, the Dr. Roger Lear interview, we had some, I think, groundbreaking material with him. And most of the shows that he's been on, they give him like two minutes, a minute and a half, 2-3 minutes, whatever. And he talks a little bit, click, and off they go. He has 20 minutes on this video. And the reason for that is because this is a smoking gun. When we look at the implants, we see that the phenomena is real. We can hold the evidence in our hand. It's tangible. It's not he said, she said. It's like right in your hand. Here's the implant. We've got it analyzed. Electron microscope, bada bing. There it is. It's got nanotubes in it. And see, it all, in my opinion, all this stuff dovetails together back into the ancient prophetic text. But we don't get into that in this DVD. This is episodic. We hope to do 20 or 30 of these things way down the line. I don't know, DVD 10. We'll start examining the different paradigms behind the phenomena. And we'll do both sides of the aisle, unlike the History Channel, which presents one side. We want, all sides heard. Let the viewer make up their own mind and discern what the phenomena is and see what best, what the evidence, where it leads. And that's what we're going to do. But that's, maybe 8 or 10 videos down the line.
Go ahead, Richard.
I just have to say the biggest aha moment for me after looking at all of this data and studying it, I've been interested in UFOs for years, but until I did this DVD with Lynn, I didn't realize that there were orbs and spacecraft and what the difference between the two things are, and that people will look at orbs and think they're looking at UFOs, and they're really not. And I think the DVD really clarifies that and shows proof of really what's going on. And when you look at all of it, it's global. It's happening all over the world, and it's happening. I mean, I just found, there were two more videos that popped up on YouTube after we finished our DVD, and one was in Japan. And these videos are getting much crisper and clearer. They used to be like so fuzzy. I mean, you look and go, well, that could be anything. You could be a guy with a flashlight on a stick. You know, I can't tell what that is. But now we've got these little tiny HD cameras, and we have cell phones with 6-megapixel cameras built into them, and people all over the world are shooting these things, and it's high res now. And there was just one that came off of YouTube from Japan, and it has this, I don't know if it's an orb or a spacecraft, but it's a white dot with little orbs like orbiting it back and forth, kind of oscillating, and then it shoots another one out of the center, and you can hear the crowd just gasp. Oh, what's that? And then there was another video where this husband and wife are in the car driving. It's at night. They're kind of fighting in the car. Wait, look, you've got to shoot this. It's really amazing what's going on. And he pulls over, and the camera's all shaky, and he's looking out of his front window. And in his headlights, you can see several other cars parked along the side of the street. Now, people getting out just to observe this. And then we're at least, I don't know, when you've seen the footage, too. How many points of light were there? 12, 15? And they were all just sitting in the sky, changing colors, you know, red, green, blue, and moving like as a, you know, it was like amazing. And this is the type of stuff that's commonplace now. Lynn, what were you saying? How many, was it every 25 minutes there's a new UFO sighting?
No, it's less than that. It's like every 10 minutes now there's a sighting somewhere on the globe that's reported, every 10 minutes.
Wow.
Now, why do you think, given that, Lynn, why do you think that governments are so reluctant to embrace this information and investigate it in the open? Why are they so secretive about this?
Well, I have an opinion about that, but I'll let Lynn get his.
You want to go first? Go ahead.
Well, I you know, on our video, Lynn points out all of the countries that have already released classified documents, Belgium, England, Mexico, the list is pretty long, except for the United States. And I believe it's because the United States is in cahoots with this, and that we have some of our technology is black ops stuff that we've been working with for the past 50 years. And when all that comes out, it will be revealed that the U.S. is tip deep in this.
Yeah.
And I would certainly concur with that. It's they're keeping the kibosh on this thing. One of the most startling news clips I saw fairly recently, which is when they had an Australian film crew, Australian news show similar to what we have over here, like the 6 o'clock news, with the typical male and female anchor type deal, and they're talking about UFOs, right, with a reporter. Now this is in Australia. And it's the same motif, the same exact the way they're dealing with the information. The announcer, well, you know, Bob, tell us about those little green men again. It's exactly these people are told how to deal with this. It's deliberate because, you know what, we see exactly the same type of scenario in the news media programs over here. The same thing. They yuck it up. It's a little green man. You know, they make some stupid little joke. It's all tongue-in-cheek. Well,
it's
these
depressing.
People are just, you know, the little pat them on the head. You know, they've had a break with reality. It just drives me nuts when I see it. In fact, and another proof of this would be former Governor Fife Symington, Phoenix Lights, 1997. When these things appeared, Symington had one press conference, and then a couple hours later, he hastily calls together another one, dresses up one of his aides in this alien costume, and then, of course, they yuck it up for everybody. Well, the constituents in Arizona were really nixed by this thing, and he got a lot of negative mail. And 10 years later on the anniversary, 2007, on the Larry King Show, he publicly apologized on national TV to his former constituents for treating the matter in such a lighthearted way, and then proceeded to admit that he, too, was in Phoenix at that time and saw the craft, and, quote, it was not of this world. So, you see, the information leaks out, and in Watcher's DVD, UFOs Are Real, Burgeoning, Not Going Away, we have this clip of when former astronaut Edgar Mitchell is on Kerrang Radio and is discussing, hey, in a matter of fact way, well, you know, Roswell happened and the government's been keeping this secret for, you know, 60 years and the government, just matter of fact, and you could tell that the host of Kerrang Radio is taken completely aback by this. He can't believe what he's hearing on his show. And so we have that clip in just to inform people that here's Edgar Mitchell saying that the phenomenon is real.
And he was
it's one of
Apollo 14.
Exactly. Edgar Mitchell, yeah. I use that clip continuously on the show because it is so powerful. And this man, it comes from, obviously, knowledge of what he saw. This isn't just fantasy in his mind. He is very clear and crystal about what's going on and that he has been made privy to it. And I'm just really fascinated with the fact that the United States government would be holding on to the information so much ever since probably, I'd say, from modern-day Roswell. And actually, you wrote a book about Roswell, the Roswell UFO crash, I seem to remember.
Mitchell did that?
No, I think, didn't you write the Roswell?
That's someone else, but I discussed Roswell. I actually interviewed Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. in the Alien Interview book. He comes on the record and talks about the 47 crash at Roswell. What is interesting, and I just want to take us back to the Fallen Angel deal, and with all due credit here to Mr. David Flynn, who wrote a paper, and this is where we get the information. But we know from the Book of Enoch, again, a very ancient manuscript, ancient text, found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, by the way, but is attributed to a couple thousand years old, if not older. Certainly the oral tradition perhaps predates the Book of Genesis. The Ethiopian Bible actually has the Book of Enoch in front of Genesis. So it's, again, it's found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, thousands of years old. What's interesting is, in the Dead Sea, in the Book of Enoch, we read that 200 angels, fallen angels specifically, descended on Mount Hermon. Okay? This is where they went. They descend. It gives the location. They descended on Mount Hermon. Well, most people go, well, who cares? Where's Mount Hermon? Well, Mount Hermon has never, that name is the same now as it was in antiquity. And we know precisely where Mount Hermon is. Mount Hermon today is between Syria, Lebanon, and Israel. Sort of a no man's land. What's interesting is when we go to the polar opposite of where Mount Hermon is located, we wind up in Roswell, New Mexico. That information was gleaned by David Flynn. He's the one that put connected those dots and first published it. So I'm quoting David Flynn and trying to give him all the credit here, and I think I've done a good job. But the bottom line is when one thinks of that, it's deliberate. It is so deliberate. It's not accidental. That they crash landed a saucer in Roswell, New Mexico, which is the polar opposite of where the first incursion was, Mount Hermon, thousands of years ago before the flood. It's unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable.
And that's way beyond. I'm just like George and Ari. I don't believe in coincidence. Everything has a means and a place, and that's fascinating. That's just really amazing. When you investigate this, Lynn, do you get government pushback on the information, or do they just do the flat-out denial it was a weather balloon kind of game?
Well,
do you get any
kind of
vibration back?
Yeah, Richard and I are always joking about it. You know, it's it's a weather balloon reflecting the planet Venus. We're filled with swamp gas in the midst of a flock of birds. You know, it's like whatever. And it's just amazing what the party line. I've had one experience with what I would consider a government spook, and that was a number of years ago when I was giving a lecture, which is really interesting. This guy came up out of nowhere. I had a table set up in the front of the room, and I had a picture that was taken at Area 51 by a man by the name of Gary Schultz. I believe it's 1992, well before the X-Files, well before anyone even knew that Area 51 existed, not like today where, you know, it's part of the pop culture, as it were. You know, Jesse Ventura was down there recently, and, you know, the Cambo dudes and the whole thing. But there was a place, in fact, I'm pulling I'm pulling the picture out now. I just want to get the date right. And that was taken 1990. So February 28th, 1990, 9 p.m. by Gary Schultz, witnessed by wife Rachel near the mailbox at the mail. Anyway, it goes on from there. But this is it's the classic disc. I'm holding it in my hands, looking at it right now. It is the classic disc, and I had this picture on my table along with some other information, and the government spook came up, and he looked at the picture and didn't pick it up. He just said, "Oh, Gary Schultz, Area 51. And I just went, excuse me? Yeah, just like I went, excuse me? And then he proceeded to start to tell me that the cattle mutilations were not real. And I'm sitting here going, and after like 5 minutes of talking to this guy, I figured it out. And I said, listen, here's the deal. If you disrupt this lecture in any way, I will have you bodily escorted bodily from the hall. And he was actually, he sat through the whole thing in the front row, a couple of rows back from the front, rather, and minded his business. But I had already alerted the security about who this guy was. That's really the only time so far that I've been actually approached by anyone, I would say. It's really weird. I think the government, and I sort of have a high profile with all the different books that I write and all the radio shows, but there's enough people that are talking about it. But it's just like, and this is off topic, but it's like the Kennedy assassination. No one cares. No one gives a flip. You know, Jesse Ventura, conspiracy theory, did that wonderful expose several weeks back on the Kennedy assassination. And, you know, it was the smoking guns all over the place. Come on, fellas, let's open up the investigation. No one cares. It's just like the Roman circus, you know, give us bread and our daily ration of Christians being torn apart by lions or whatever. It's the same thing. Give us American Idol, give us Dancing with the Stars, you know, give us a six-pack of beer, and that's all we really care about. And unfortunately, that's, you know, most of them, I'm not going to put a number on it, but too many Americans are asleep. It's time to wake up and understand that, you know, what's happening here.
Dr. Lear said when he said, what's it going to take to get people to wake up and realize what's happening? He said, I don't think, remember Lynn on the DVD, he said, what's it going to take if a UFO landed on the Hollywood freeway in rush hour, people would be on their cell phones trying to get it removed so they could go home to watch the Rams game. I mean, that's the kind of the mentality.
It's true.
Yeah, it is. It is true. And I tell you, there's so many items in the new DVD, The Watchers, that we just don't have enough time to cover them all. But one of the things that just really got my attention was when they extracted these items, these metallic items out of people, the doctor mentioned that when they went in to retrieve them, these items would move away from the surgical instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has to show that they're self-powered, they're self-preserving.
You know, somehow they made the stainless steel non-magnetic instruments momentarily magnetized, and that's something we don't know how to do.
I'm sorry, Colin, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Blog Talk has got a little bit of a delay tonight, Lynn. I apologize, but you go ahead, sir.
All right, I appreciate that. Dr. Lear talks about one of the strangest cases he had where the implant was directly underneath the person's skin, and as Dr. Lear would move towards it just with his hand, you could watch the object retreat 2 or 3 inches underneath the person's skin. It would actually travel underneath the skin. I mean, it's just the most bizarre thing I've ever heard of, ever. I mean, that's just incredibly strange. And with the same thing, as he's trying to remove these things, the objects, it's high strangeness, as Linda Milton Howe would call it. But it really is. It's just, it's really bizarre stuff. And, you know, what are we looking at? These metallic objects have nanotubes. Nanotubes are not found in nature. We're just starting to be able to manufacture these things. He shows us one under an electron microscope where we see some sort of a boundary. is created in this metallic object to do what? No one knows. We're not sure exactly what they do. I believe, like Lear believes, and this I'm writing about this in the new book, The Cosmic Chess Match. Again, going back to the prophetic aspect of this, we don't get into this in Watcher's DVD, so this is a little bit extra. But I know, you know, your listeners are smart, and they've all heard of the so-called 666 Mark of the Beast deal, right? Well, we've learned from prophetic texts that oftentimes there are two or three or sometimes a myriad of prophecies, sometimes as many as 20 different prophecies talking about the same event. But we don't see it. Many people don't. We don't put those prophecies together sometimes, a priori, unfortunately, until after it happens. Then we go, oh, my gosh, look at this, 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 this. Then it becomes really obvious. But is it possible? There's a portion of the book of Revelation that says in the latter days, in the end times, men will seek death but not be able to find it. Men will seek death but not be able to find it. What the heck does that mean? Is that just poetic, you know, nonsense that's, you know, some guy who had moldy bread to eat or something was hallucinating and this is what he wrote? Or, in fact, is he looking into the future and telling us of some bizarre event, something that's going to happen where people will not be able to die? Well, here's the deal. Yeah. It goes back to the implants. What if, and it's a huge what if and a speculation on my part, but Dr. Roger Lear and I both agree that these implants are not tracking devices. He believes that they are changing the DNA, changing to what he's not sure. So I take it from there and run with the ball a little bit. And this is speculation, but I think it's based on the prophetic found in the book of Revelation. What if when they reveal themselves, the so-called extraterrestrials present a chip, just like these implants that Roger Lear is taking out, which I believe are prototypes. And this chip will be able to expand or extend your lifespan 300 to 500 years.
Right. And there are stories in the Old Testament and elsewhere that people did live for
900 years. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so...
Listen to this, because it ties back into to one more prophecy. It says, we're told, as in the days of Noah, it'll be like during the time of the second coming in the last day. And what differentiates the days of Noah, first of all, the fallen angels. Well, another part which differentiates the days of Noah is the breeding program. But there's a third dynamic which many people overlook, and that is the length of life was extended. Was, like you just said, 500, 600, 900 years old. And this is what I think. Can you imagine if, let's say, a mothership shows up all over the planet? Here's just a quick scenario. Let's say there's a war in the Middle East, which we know is going to happen at some point in time. Nukes go off. This creates the greatest global fear that mankind has ever experienced collectively. And we're all watching CNN and Fox News and MSNBC and the Internet and looking for all the information, and we're all horrified. This is it. We're going to blow ourselves up. Oh, my gosh, right? And all of a sudden, we see overhead in the cities of the world, large craft, mile-wide, two-mile-wide craft, right? Everyone at first is freaked out. And then they come with, here's the Trojan horse, bearing gifts. And that gift will be, not only are we here with the free energy deal, but we're here to usher you into a time of peace, prosperity, and knowledge, and we have this chip which will, you know, you guys were not supposed to just, you know, only live to 60, 70, 80 years. That's an infant in comparison to what you're supposed to. This chip will expand your lifespan to 500 years. The line will be around the block. People will clamor
to get it. And who wouldn't grab for that? Who wouldn't?
Bingo.
Very few people would say, let me finish my 80 years and leave. So, yeah, I can see where you're at on that, definitely.
Yeah, weird, huh?
And I see that Richard has dropped off the planet, but I'm sure he'll be back. But Lynn, let me ask you this. With everything that you have experienced and written about and lectured about, do you see more people coming to the realization of what is really happening out there, or are we still wrapped in this commercial cocoon that we've created ourselves?
It's very poetic. I would say, for the most part, this is why I'm not a threat. You know, I get between 3,000 and 4,000 people on my blog on a daily basis. It's growing, but it's not like, you know, 100,000 people. It's not that. It's 3,000 to 4,000 people a day. Most people are willfully and sometimes viciously ignorant of what is going on around them. They don't realize is that there are supernatural forces that are at work on this planet, that have been at work on this planet. Again, we go back into prophecy, and we're told that the mystery of iniquity is working. That's 2,000 years ago. Another way of saying that the secret of lawlessness has been at work, and it continues to work. The stuff that we're seeing on this planet, some of it is incredibly orchestrated. And you talk about conspiracies. Oh yeah, there's a conspiracy, and the person behind this thing, they are dark, malevolent, evil forces at work. All one needs to do, for instance, is I'll just give you one example. When we look at the Haitian earthquake, which, you right. know, why is Haiti devastated? The Dominican Republic is fine. Why is it that over $1.5 billion sits in the United States Treasury and never gets to Haiti months afterwards? Why is it that the cholera outbreak, according to news that I just read today, now they're saying it was brought in by the French? Hello? What are we looking at here? Yeah. And we don't really understand. And see, people are willfully ignorant of history. Just real quick, Hitler liquidated, systematically annihilated and killed in his Nazi genocidal machine of the Nazi state over 12 million people. 6 million deliberately went after the Jews. But Stalin murdered 60 million of his own people, and the Chi Coms 70 million of their own people. And it's here. The idea is to cull the population, and you know we don't have to go back too far to see that this is how the game is played, and that's what I believe that they're trying to do in Haiti.
Well, they do say that about a third of the population would be the perfect existence for Earth than what we have now. So, I could see that happening. I'm going to open this up, this phone line. Richard, is that you?
Yes, I'm back.
There you are. That's okay, so thank you. Welcome back. Sasquatch Spirit down in Virtual Studio states that some members have only been here for 40 years and are already ready to go. Big LOL on that one. And Dominica is saying many have patients running thin. And Grand Elf is saying if we lived 900 years, we would have to work 875 of them. So, you know. That's a government employee speaking. I can guarantee
there you
that.
Go.
I can guarantee. But yeah, I can see where man as a species is designed for much more than 80 years. I mean, by the time we put together what we need to know about life, it's over.
I
you
agree.
Know, too soon we get old. Too late we get smart. And,
I
you know,
agree.
It's just
my,
quite
one
simple.
Of my dad's favorite sayings.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to say, Lynn, I've looked over your sites, and Richard has given me some insight into where to look and where to go. And your books, I hate to get commercial, but these are fabulous stocking stuffers. I mean, you know, you're talking The Alien Interviews, The Queen of All, A Message from Heaven, The Fabric of Time, Stars of Bethlehem. I mean, these are amazing books that are available on your site. So, I invite everybody to have a look at the Virtual Studio, those that are down there. The links are up there for you to go and have a look at L.A. Marzulli's site and pinlight.com, of course. But The Watchers. Now, this DVD has been released, and it's out there for consumption. And my understanding is it's going like gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is selling like hotcakes. We get orders throughout the day, and it continues to sell, and we're getting accolades from people. People actually in the industry and also in the UFO community that have several people have declared that it's the best documentary they've seen on the UFO phenomena to date. And we keep hearing it over and over and over again from people who are, you know, either, again, they're either radio hosts or they have websites or they're authors or whatever. And they're looking at the work that Richard and I put together, and they're just, you know, the accolades keep coming in. So that speaks louder than anything, I could possibly say. So it's really rewarding, I know, for the both of us to create it. And we really feel that we've only scratched the surface. It is episodic. This is the first of many, probably between 25 and 30, somewhere in that range before we're done.
Right. Yeah. It's a big story. I mean, it covers a lot of possibilities and a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. Out of everything that you've done, Lynn, over the last 30 years, what would you say is your personal favorite that you can actually bite into and enjoy the taste?
Well, I mean, for me, The Watchers is a whole different deal because it moved me into something that I used to watch, like the History Channel, Ancient Aliens, and get really ticked off at what I was looking at. And, you know, there's a saying, you know, don't get mad, get even. And this was sort of birthed out of that whole History Channel, Ancient Aliens program. It's like, well, they're not telling the whole story. Well, let's go tell it ourselves. Okay. And we had a modicum of funding. And Richard and I, you know, set off. I mean, literally, it's lunch money for the History Channel for a week. That's what we did this thing for. But it's a labor of love, and it's my favorite project. I mean, I love my books, I love my writing and radio show and all the blog and everything else. But there's something about video. There's something about, you know, interviewing people on camera, and it's a different medium, and it's for me sort of a new medium, one that I've always wanted to engage in but never really had the opportunity. I've been interviewed on television frequently, but never my own thing where we had control. And that's what was so great about the team at Richard and I formed, because we're controlling the content, we're controlling where this thing is going. It's not being, you know, the producer's not going, ah, we're going to cut this scene out because he doesn't like it. We had total control of this baby, and it's from the heart, it's from the gut, and we pull no punches. Some of the scenes in there, specifically the cattle mutilations, it's pretty graphic stuff, and there's a warning, a viewer discretion warning, but we put it in there because the cattle mutilations and the implants are the two smoking guns which show that the phenomena is not imaginary, it is real.
Right. I can't believe it, guys. We burned through an hour, and I'm getting all kinds of rude remarks from my producer because we never broke once, but that we'll get over it next week. We'll double it next week.
Whoops.
What the heck? But, whoops. Lynn, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir. Now, people can go to your website, and that's lamarzulli.net.
That's correct.
And they can pick up your information there and move on from there. And, Richard, you're at pinlight.com.
And,
that's correct. You also have a link to the Watchers and what have you there. Am I correct?
I do, and the latest information on the Torah codes, which is growing by the minute. And you have a lot more new stuff. I just got a personal letter from Professor Rip the other day, who found a new table, Economic Stock Crisis, which is in a string of Hebrew characters, 14 letters long, the actual skip, and in such a long expression of words is one in 7 million.
Fabulous. I tell you what, let's do that one in January, Richard, and we'll go over the Torah code again. Mr. Marzulli, it's been an absolute pleasure, sir.
I appreciate you being with me, and
on the 22nd, when you see my friend George Nouri, give him my kudos, and keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you having us on.
Thank you very much, Lynn.
Likewise.
Richard, thank you very much, sir. You gentlemen take care of yourselves.
You too.
It's my pleasure, totally.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, L.A. Marzulli and Richard Shaw, brand new video out. It's probably one of the best videos you'll see in quite a long time. It's called The Watchers. Google it. You will be surprised. We got to get out of here.
Hey, Night Zoners, got a minute? I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems, or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness. Remember the golden rule, but for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet.
This has been a Night Zone production in association with Blog Talk. Radio.com.
And before we disappear, let me remind you that new blog is coming up live beginning January, thenightzone.blogspot.com. Make sure you check that out. And also, next week, next Saturday night, Robert Reland, we got some really interesting stuff for you. Make sure you check back with us. Blessings on your household, everybody. Let's all be careful out there. Good night.